Thanks for joining me today. My name is Mike Bruska. I'm a partner at Davis & Bruska, and I specialize in prosecuting long-term care cases, nursing homes, assisted living facilities, group homes, and things of that nature, generally institutions where you have vulnerable people. Today, what I want to discuss are what are called pressure injuries. They go by many names. They're also called pressure ulcers, or more commonly to most folks, they're known as bed sores. I want to talk about bed sores because it's one of the more common types of injuries that we see that are a result of neglect, and they can be devastating injuries. Bed sores generally are not a cause of death. That is, the wound itself doesn't cause the death, but these wounds can be very large and they compromise the body in multiple ways. Number one, they're a huge source of infection. Infection gets into them, it causes bone infections, and that can cause death. Additionally, these wounds are very traumatic to the body. So whereas your body might be using resources to work on other things, it understands how problematic these wounds are and will divert a lot of your resources to healing the wound. And any good nurse will tell you that preventing pressure injuries is a heck of a lot easier than healing them once they've formed. So these are really important injuries in long-term care facilities, and they're specifically on the lookout for them. I would say, too, in hospitals, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services won't pay for their treatment because, you know, if you get a stage 3 or stage 4 wound, which I'll discuss in a minute, in a hospital, Medicare said these shouldn't happen with good nursing where they're meeting the minimum standards. And so they don't pay for the treatment of them if you get a stage 3 or 4 wound in a hospital. So they're on everybody's radar, and they better be on the long-term care facility's radar. And unfortunately, they wind up on the radar of my clients. Pressure injuries are caused by what you think, unrelieved pressure. They form on what are called bony prominence oftentimes. What these are areas of the body where, because of the way the bones are formed, they put a unique pressure on the skin when you're laying down or seated. And the problem with that is when you have unrelieved pressure, blood can't get to that area, and blood carries oxygen. And if you're not getting good blood flow to a particular area, then the tissue starts to die because it's not getting enough oxygen. And this happens in pretty intuitive areas. So if you're laying down on your back, you'll see the buttocks are one of these areas that are under pressure from a bony prominence, from the hip bone. Also the sacrum, which is the small of the back, that one's particularly problematic because the skin is thinner there. The heels, right? On the heels when you're lying down, you can also see them on the toes. These can form from the sheets and blankets putting constant pressure where a person's just not being moved. I've also currently have cases right now where they get them on the back of the head, which is completely inexcusable. And so you have unrelieved pressure on these areas, blood flow doesn't get to the areas, and so the tissue starts to die off. Now, pressure injuries are staged by severity, and they're staged by depth. That's how they tell how serious the wound is. So there's really four major stages. There's an organization called the National Pressure Injury Advisory Panel, and they set the stages for pressure injuries that are adopted by every healthcare professional, as far as I know. And this organization isn't just national, it's really worldwide. These types of injuries are important to a lot of people, and preventing them is very important to a lot of people. It's not just in the United States. So the staging goes as follows. Stage one pressure injury is what they call non-blanchable redness. So it looks like or presents as like sunburn would. It can be difficult to see this on a person who has a darker skin, but it would present generally like sunburn. And like sunburn, if you put pressure on it, the tissue doesn't change color. So if you standing here right now, I'm to put pressure on my hand with my thumb, and I release my thumb, you can see that the tissue below it is a lighter color, and then it quickly returns to its normal color. That's blanching. Non-blanchable redness is where you have a redness on the skin and you put pressure on it. When you relieve the pressure, it doesn't change color. That's because the redness is coming from damaged tissue. And so this is a non-blanchable redness. This is a stage one injury. Now, this is a huge red flag to any caregiver. The people who should see a stage one wound in long-term care are generally going to be the certified nurse aides when they're doing incontinence care or when they're bathing or dressing a resident. They should be on the lookout. This, like I said, is very well known, and the staff better be trained to not only look for these areas, but if they see this redness of any variety, to immediately take it to their supervisor to be assessed by a registered nurse. Because like I said, preventing these injuries is far easier than healing them once they've formed. Now, this non-blanchable redness should clear up fairly quickly, 24, 48 hours. If you just get them off the area, it should heal fairly quickly. It can form in 6 hours, 8 hours, something along those lines, but a stage one wound is just on the very surface of the skin. It's very minor and it should heal fairly quickly. Now, a stage two wound is a blistering, but it's confined just to the outer layer of the skin. If you've had babies and you've seen diaper rash, this is akin to a stage two wound. A lot of times stage two wounds and stage one wounds really get formed a lot by not keeping people clean during incontinence care. So not getting them out of adult diapers quickly enough will cause stage one and stage two wounds. And so even a stage two wound is very minor. And again, this is a major red flag. There's creams you can use. Candidly, the ones I've seen ordered were the same ones I used for my kids when they were babies. And just keeping them clean, keeping them dry, putting on one of these ointments like A&D ointment, or there's a product, it's called Butt Paste. That's the product. That one actually works the best in my opinion. And using the barrier cream should heal the skin up fairly quickly. And again, the CNAs, the frontline caregivers, better be trained that if they see any kind of blistering, to immediately take it to the supervisor's attention. Now, stage two wounds you'll see frequently in areas around the anus, like the buttocks, the sacrum, if a person's in an adult diaper, and where they're going to have contact from feces and urine, because those are what they call caustic, or they're agitators to the skin and cause tissue death. Now, the next stage is a stage three pressure injury. This is now it's serious. This is where the tissue damage extends below the skin and into the tissues below that. And so you have a more serious injury. This is not something that's going to clear up in a day or two. Now you have something more serious. I can generally tell if a resident's been neglected in a nursing home when the first mention of a pressure injury is a stage three. That means the staff are just either untrained or overworked. They're not seeing the skin break down. They're not doing their ADLs, activities of daily living, like changing the diaper and bathing quickly enough. They're not doing these things. And you can tell that when the first mention of the skin breakdown on the sacrum is a stage three, because they've missed a stage one and a stage two. And so now they're not even going to, they don't even bring it to anyone's attention until it's a far more dangerous stage three. Of course, then you have a stage four. And stage four injuries are very serious. Oftentimes, in the cases that I do, the folks do not survive the stage four wound. That is, it never heals. Stage four wounds are when the tissue damage extends well into the skin. Oftentimes, you can see what they call bone involvement, or you can see the bone. This is very dangerous because infections then can migrate into the bone. You have osteomyelitis, which requires actually cutting the infected bone out, and they're very, very serious. Stage four wounds have to be kept clean, so they're going to undergo a process called debridement, generally done by a plastic surgeon under anesthesia, where they literally have to cut into the living tissue all the way around the border of the wound, making sure that all the dead tissue is out of there. You have to keep them clean, because if you have dead tissue in a wound, that can encourage infection. And so they have to be kept very clean. There's other products like Santyl's one, where it's a, like, it comes in a tube, like a paste, and they smear it in there and then wash it out. It strips out the dead tissue. And so stage four and stage three wounds are very serious. And they're almost always caused by neglect. It's very rare where I have a case where I can attribute the wound to something other than just neglect. There's two other categories of wounds which are important to know. These are newer designations. One is what's called a DTI, or deep tissue injury. Now, as I just explained, the stages of one through four, so those wounds will start on the outside of the skin and work their way in. A deep tissue injury goes the opposite way. In a deep tissue injury, you have a unrelieved pressure for a period of time, and it causes the damage below the skin first. In these instances, they will present as a very dark purple bruise called ecchymosis. It is very obvious that there's something problematic going on. If you've ever hit your thumb while hammering a nail, when you miss the nail and it turns black, or I'm a runner, so if you've run like a half marathon or full marathon, sometimes when your toes will turn black and the nail falls out, that's a deep tissue injury. And in these instances, the tissue damage is below the surface of the skin. Now, if you see this, these wounds can be very, very serious unless you get on it right away, because what you don't want to happen is the wound to open up. So if you start to see that bruising form, you have to make sure you're getting them off this bony prominence right away. It does not have to open up. The problem is when they're formed from neglect, that neglect generally doesn't abate. So what happens is they don't get them off the wound, and then it opens up. Now, when these wounds open up, they are devastating and terrible. They are full of dead tissue, and they are almost always stage four wounds right away. They will require debridement, hospitalization. They're very, very serious. So when any time you see a deep tissue injury or bruising, you have to be certain that that person is getting off that bony prominence, because you do not want it to open up. Whatever you can do to prevent that needs to be done. The last category I want to talk about is what's called an unstageable wound. Now, unstageable wounds are unstageable because you can't tell the depth, because that's how you stage one through four. And you can't tell the depth because there's too much dead tissue or other tissue on it that makes it impossible to determine the depth. So you can have what they call slough, which is kind of like a grayish yellow tissue, and it's full of slough. It's very hard to tell the depth. Or eschar, which is kind of like a scar, like a scab. It's a little different, but you can't tell the depth. And so because you can't tell the depth, is therefore unstageable. Now, unstageable wounds are always at least a three, oftentimes a four. So if there is going to be a debridement where they're going to clean it all out, then they'll be able to tell the depth of the wound. So you have stages one through four, deep tissue injuries, and unstageable wounds. Now, how do you prevent these things? There's a great quote from Florence Nightingale, who is the founder of modern nursing. And that quote is, she wrote this in 1859, quote, "If he has a bed sore, it's generally not the fault of the disease, but of the nursing," close quote. And that is my understanding as well. Prevention of pressure injuries is basic nursing. Whereas nowadays, you will often find wound nurses in hospitals and in nursing homes. This is basic nursing. This is not complex medicine. It is just relieving the pressure and keeping the skin clean and dry, and that's it. So how often should pressure be relieved? Well, the general consensus is that you should relieve the pressure at least every 2 hours when a person is lying down, and every 1 hour if they're sitting up. The reason that you have to do it more often if they're sitting up is because if you're laying down, your pressure is more widely distributed. However, if you're seated, there you have direct pressure coming right down on the buttocks through the hip bones into that pressure, into that tissue below, right? And these wounds are called ischial wounds. They're caused by the bony prominence is the ischium. And so they put direct pressure right on the buttocks and the sacrum as well if the person is slouched in the chair, which they often are. So if you're in a wheelchair, you just have to shift the weight at least every hour. Now, if you're sitting there in a chair at a boring multi-hour meeting, you will do this without even thinking about it. You will not sit still, I can assure you, for 3 hours, and will not at risk of getting a pressure injury because you will move without even thinking about it. This is a problem when you have people that are bedbound, chairbound, cognitively impaired, don't know to ask for help, and they are reliant on someone for what they call bed mobility. That is, they need help just to shift their weight. Now, how far do you have to shift the weight? It's not as far as you think. So it's not like you have to be laying on your back, then you have to lay on your side, then you have to lay on your other side. You can do that, it's fine, but it's not required. It's generally accepted that a 30-degree shift, right, or shifting the body up 30 degrees one way and then back 30 degrees the other way is adequate. You just have to be sure that the part of the body that is under pressure is going to be relieved and blood can get back inside that area. Oftentimes, you'll see there are pillows or wedges that they'll use to ensure that the person stays in that position. It's also important for family to understand these risks, right? Lastly, I want to talk about nutrition because nutrition is very important and is well known to be linked to the health of the skin and in particular to heal pressure injuries. So in particular, nursing needs to work with dietary or the registered dietitian. When you have people that are cognitively impaired, oftentimes their diet can be compromised. Either they don't eat on their own well enough or they're not getting enough good food. And so this can put the skin at risk. So one thing that you have to be mindful of is if you do have a person who is not eating well or some nutritional problems, that they need to meet with the registered dietitian to be sure they're getting enough calories and in particular enough protein. The way you know this is by looking at their labs. Labs will specifically look for markers to see what the protein levels are like. This is especially important if you have any kind of skin breakdown. So if you have a stage one wound or a stage two wound, you had better have seen the registered dietitian who's going to look at your labs and see if they need to make adjustments to your diet. Be sure you're getting enough protein or add a protein supplement because protein is what your body uses to fix skin problems, right? It's like the building blocks of the body. So if you're not giving it the building blocks it needs, I don't care how much pasta you're eating, it's not giving you protein. And so your body doesn't have the tools it needs to fix the skin. Okay, so if your mom or dad or your loved one has a pressure injury, how do you know if it's healing? Because I'll tell you, I've never got used to looking at these things. And when I've seen them, they're horrifying. And I've had nurses, when I was new to this, explain to me, oh, that wound looks really good. And I look at it and I think there's nothing good about what we're looking at right there. One of the markers for improvement of wound is what's called granulation tissue. This is a reddish tissue. It's bumpy and it is healing tissue. This is what it looks like when your body is healing the insult or the wound. So if you have a wound and it's been cleaned out and it is healing, you will see this granulation tissue. And oftentimes, if you're looking at your loved one's medical records, it'll have a percentage of the wound that is full of granulation tissue. It will say something like 20% sloth, 80% granulation tissue. That is a wound that's healing itself, right? You do have some slough in there, which you'd want to clean out, but the granulation tissue in the wound bed is the body is trying to fix this as best it can. And that's why it's super important to see the registered dietitian because you have to be sure that you're getting enough of the right material in your diet to give your body what it needs to heal that wound. So that's what I have to say about pressure injuries today. Obviously, the prevention is the key part. However, if you do get one, healing is not an impossibility. If they step up the nursing care and you see the dietitian healing these wounds is a distinct possibility. So whereas I hope you never wind up in that position, if you do, it's important to meet with the director of nursing and the care planning team, find out what they're doing to be sure that pressure is being offloaded for your loved one, and have they met the dietitian, what did they find, and what changes are being made. And hold them to it and call them to task, because if you're the advocate for this person, no one loves them like you do. And so stepping up there and being sure that these folks are doing the job is very important. I hope this has been useful to you, and I hope you have a great day. Thank you for listening.